From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The swift rise in popularity of electric scooters has city dwellers and transit planners hustling to figure out how to deal with them. Some people love scooters, their freedom, their frugality. Some people think they're accidents waiting to happen. Meg Young, Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Transit Bureau, tells us how the city is working to set ground rules for vendors and users, hoping to pave a smooth path for everyone. As with any change, patience goes a long way.
Some of the outcries, I think, are people adapting to something that's new. There's a learning curve of how people learn to operate them, how they learn to interact with other people on the roadway.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. It has a motor, but it's not a car. It has wheels and a handlebar, but it's not a bike. The ubiquitous electric scooters buzzing around Baltimore streets and sidewalks are popular with riders, but their presence can exasperate motorists and startle pedestrians, and they can be dangerous. In short, the zippy, affordable mode of transit is raising a lot of questions for transportation departments across the country. Here to help us unravel all the issues circling around scooters is Meg Young. She is the Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Department of Transportation Transit Bureau. Welcome to On the Record, Meg.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much for having me.
Just to be clear, these are scooters the rider stands on. They're like skateboards with handles.
You could describe it as that, and you're right, it's different than something where you were seated or a mobility scooter. And for that reason, it's new to Baltimore City and the state of Maryland. We had to actually define what this vehicle was in the law recently.
They can be left and picked up anywhere? It's works by GPS?
Correct. They all have GPS on them, so you can track them through an app, and the companies can see where they are at all times. You should say they can be left nearly anywhere. Of course, you have to be courteous, not blocking a driveway, an ADA ramp, a bus stop, or, you know, a door that somebody needs to access.
How and when did scooters arrive in Baltimore?
So they arrived in Baltimore last summer, in June, and they really just flew in. Like many other cities, a company actually launched here without receiving a permit first. And so we, as the city, then approached them and entered into a pilot agreement, which launched August of 2018.
A pilot agreement. Mm-hmm. What did you look for during the pilot time?
So the pilot was a time for us to test out if we really want to have these on our roadways. Like I said, they're not defined as vehicles, so previously in the state code or in the city code. So we actually have to go through legislation if we want them to be permanent. So during the pilot period, we had to evaluate a lot, to be honest.
And that was from August until February, end of February this spring, right?
Right. So that was the original time span of the pilot. We did end up extending it. So during that time, we met every 2 weeks. We had open meetings with different city agencies from the police department, the health department, planning, law, really anyone who had a stake in what was going on, as well as nonprofits, Bike More, you know, neighborhood groups, the Downtown Partnership. We tried to make it as open as possible, even invited the companies, so we could make sure we were evaluating everything which was important to different people and different stakeholders.
Yeah.
The big three categories ended up being safety, of course, access and how they're being used, and then the overall public perception.
So on the question of safety, what did you conclude from the pilot?
We concluded it's hard to figure out how safe these are. This is something that cities across the nation are dealing with. We, of course, asked the vendors to tell us, you know, any crashes that they know of, but someone doesn't fall off a scooter and then call the company and say, I fell off your scooter. Usually they're more embarrassed than anything else. So we ended up exhausting everything we could, every method we could think of. We ended up getting the most success from working with the health department, and they pulled hospital records from all of the hospitals in Baltimore City and right outside of city limits to look for anything involving a scooter or mentioning the name of one of the companies. So that helped us to actually look at severe injuries for a scrape or a bruise. We had to rely a lot more on qualitative data. It was hard to track down. So we asked people about crashes in our community survey, and then we had the Downtown Partnership and Waterfront Partnership guides actually record what they would witness when they were out on the streets.
But on the serious injuries, I think that's what people mm-hmm. worry about. I saw a report in the last couple of weeks from the Consumer Product Safety Commission that head injuries on scooters had increased a lot over the last, like, decade. What did you find?
You're right. Severe and fatal injuries is what would cause us to actually cancel this program during the pilot. That is what we were most concerned about, 100%. What we found is that scooters were not producing any more serious injuries than biking or perhaps walking. It's hard to tell exactly because you can't see how many people are walking somewhere every day. We do have a count of how many people are riding scooters every day. So we actually have more data in some regards about scooters. And so it ended up being right around the same amount of crashes as biking, but we have reason to believe there's more people scooting right now than riding their bikes. So over the course of the pilot from August to February, we turned up 63 records from hospitals.
You say you do know how many people are riding scooters. Tell us.
Mm-hmm. So we can see how many people have accounts with each of the different vendors. At the time when we had the 63 crashes, we were up to about 190,000 accounts with the companies. So that is a lot of people.
And how many rides?
At that point, we were at 730,000 rides in 6 months. To date, right now, we just had our busiest week on record. So from June 30th to July 6th, we had over 48,000 scooter rides in 1 week.
So you're a transportation expert. I'm not. That sounds like a big part of the transportation picture in Baltimore.
It is a significant amount of rides. You're right. And that's why we're hoping that rides like these could actually relieve congestion and change travel patterns for people.
And you were also looking at access and public perception. Tell me about those.
Sure. So for access, we actually have trip data about every single trip that was taken on scooters. So during the pilot, we looked at where the rides are taking place geographically, as well as the time of day, day of the week, all of that. We took a specific look at 15 areas around the city, which we designated as equity zones. And so in those zones, we required the companies to place vehicles in the morning, and we monitored to see if those were being used in those neighborhoods where perhaps they would not have put scooters otherwise. You know, it's not downtown where they think they're going to make money. What we saw there is 20% of scooters ended up there in the morning, and about 28% would end up there at night. And so it seemed like people were really using them for commuting.
And what about perception?
So for public perception, we launched a community survey, which was open for about a month over the winter. And we saw over 5,200 responses to the survey, which is huge. That's more than any other city in the nation for a survey like this about dockless vehicles. I should say it was by no means scientific. The demographics did not perfectly reflect the demographics of the city, but it told us a lot. We could see most of the divisions were by age. They were not by sex or by race. So in terms of ridership, more younger people ride them than older. However, 1 in 4 people over the age of 55 who took our survey had ridden a scooter.
Wow.
Ridership between male and female was pretty even, as well as race and ethnicity. One other interesting question that we asked on the survey was how this was affecting other vehicle modes. So since scooters have arrived, are you driving less? Are you walking more? The main mode that was affected was taxi cabs and Ubers. So people are taking fewer taxis since scooters have arrived. The only mode that we saw an increase in was walking. And that's actually been a trend nationwide. So just because people are getting out of their cars and outside already, they're tending to walk more after the arrival of scooters. Or maybe they're just walking to find a scooter.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Meg Young, the Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Department of Transportation Transit Bureau. We're talking about the dockless motorized scooter system in Baltimore City and regulations surrounding their distribution and use. How many vendors will supply scooters in the city when you make your choice?
So with our new permit application, we've said we'll permit up to 4 vendors. But we're making this a competitive process because we want to make sure we get vendors who are going to work with us and work for the residents of Baltimore. So we're going to score applications, and if we don't find 4 that we think will work with us, then we might be fewer than 4.
And what are you looking for in vendors? What will make a high score for a vendor?
So we weighted each part of the application. On the application, the vendors have to tell us everything from their vehicle details to their plans to innovate and make their vehicles safer. We required equity zones for deployments and engagement with local communities, and we left room there for them to tell us how they want to engage with the community and how they want to do outreach. We required some things that are not required in other jurisdictions. We are actually requiring them to have their websites and apps compliant with WCAG standards, which
WCAG.
Is...
WCAG.
So that's accessibility standards for websites. Here in Baltimore, we have the National Federation for the Blind headquarters, and we have the largest chapter of the Federation for the Blind. And so it's important to think of how every roadway user could interact with these vehicles. A blind person may not want to ride a scooter, but if they find one on the sidewalk, they may need to report it being parked illegally or in the way.
Have you looked at what other cities are doing for best practices?
Of course. The National Association of City Transportation Officials has been a huge resource for us during the pilot. We have a group dedicated to bike share and dockless vehicle share. And so at my disposal, I have a wonderful listserv of cities across the nation that are really dealing with these same issues. I would also really like to give credit to DC, who is about 6 months ahead of us in this process, and their coordinator, who we probably speak once a week to talk about what we're both experiencing and things that we want to implement and talk through problems.
What else should I know about the rules and regulations for vendors?
Well, it will be a new and improved version from the pilot. Because we did a thorough evaluation, we thought about what's causing problems and how can we fix it. So there are a lot more regulations for the vendors to follow, and then we will actually have more oversight because of changes in reporting. Moving forward, the city will have a live feed of where the scooters are. We'll be able to track them a lot more closely. And so if there are issues, we're going to be able to react a lot faster.
Does the city make money from dockless scooters?
Well, it's not costing us money, but the way that the program is set up is that it sustains itself. We are charging the companies a permitting fee to operate on the public right-of-way, but all of those fees have to be used to sustain the program. And so that's another big change moving forward, is that we will have these funds readily accessible to be able to address issues. That could be everything from an education campaign that we're planning to educate people about what the scooter's laws are and about how to interact with scooters on the roadway, to building out things like designated parking spots. So we'll have the data about where most trips are ending, and so on those blocks we can actually make parking spaces so they're not left everywhere and they can be parked in a designated space.
The governor of Wisconsin recently signed a bill regulating scooters. Is there discussion of this at the state level in Maryland?
Yes. There were a number of bills introduced in our recent session, and there was one that passed that mostly dealt with defining the vehicle. Like I said, it was previously not defined in our vehicle codes. The bill that passed ultimately put it in the same category as a bicycle. So anybody riding a scooter has the same rights and responsibilities of somebody who would ride a bicycle. That means you ride on the street, operating as far to the right as possible. If you're under 16, you're required to wear a helmet. If you're riding after dark, you need to have a headlight and a taillight on your vehicle. Those are the highlights.
We need to take a quick break, and I want to pick up when we're back on the rights and responsibilities of riders. Meg Young is the Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Department of Transportation. We're talking about the introduction of motorized scooters in the city and regulating how they're used. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the electric scooters popping up all over Baltimore City streets. They're popular, but they're hard to define when it comes to transportation category. Meg Young, the Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Department of Transportation Transit Bureau, is with us. She's on the front lines of figuring all this out. Earlier, we talked about rules and regulations for vendors. Now we're looking at rider experience and responsibility. How does someone rent an electric scooter? How do you find one?
The main way people find scooters is by downloading the app for the company. We have Lime, Bird, Jump, and Spin here in Baltimore. So you open the app and you can see where they are because they have GPS, and then you do everything through your phone. We do require that the companies also have a non-smartphone option. So most of them offer a text to unlock. So to do that, you have to call them to set up your account or do it from a computer, but then you can text to unlock a scooter.
And what does it cost to use a scooter?
So it varies from company to company. The standard rate is $1 to unlock and then 15 cents a minute.
And do you have a sense of how long a typical trip is?
The average trip is about 12 minutes, and it's just under a mile.
Are there established rules for riders? How do users find out about rules?
So the companies do put all of the rules in the app, and I think that's the way that most riders are learning about them. That's something that we want to change moving forward. We want to do a better job of really publicizing the laws, and with the new permits, we're going to have funds to be able to do that, to have PSAs, to equip the Baltimore police with educational cards that they can hand out.
What are some of the basic rules, like where to ride and speed limits?
So scooters ideally would be ridden in the street in a bike lane if there is one available. They can share the space with bikes pretty easily. You're going about the same speed as a bike. In the new law that we passed, we did say that if you're on a high-speed road, something where the speed limit's over 30 miles per hour, you can get on the sidewalk for your safety, but then you as the scooter operator need to reduce your speed to 6 miles per hour so that you're not endangering pedestrians.
So you can ride on a sidewalk, but slowly?
Slowly, and only if it's on a high-speed roadway. If you're in a neighborhood, there's not as much traffic, you should operate it in the street.
Other basic rules for riders?
Other basic rules, really follow the rules of the road. Don't run red lights. Stop at stop signs. Riders under the age of 16 are required to wear a helmet, although right now the operators require that all users are over 18.
I think everybody has seen scooters lying around sidewalks as if abandoned. What are the parking rules?
I always say, just park courteously. You can park on a sidewalk anywhere that's the public right-of-way, so don't park it on somebody's private property. Don't park it behind a fence. On the sidewalk, you need to leave at least 4 feet of space. Because think about it, if somebody's coming by in a wheelchair, if somebody's coming by pushing a stroller, you need to leave room for them. That's what the sidewalk is made for. So be courteous. You also should not block a driveway, a door, an emergency exit, or a transit stop. Make sure people can still get off the bus.
Who enforces rules for riders?
The Baltimore Police Department is the only one who can enforce moving violations. What they've said is they really would like to do more warnings and education about what the laws are prior to giving a ton of tickets. So that's what we'll be seeing with the new permits. Parking can be enforced by our traffic enforcement officers. And with the new permit, we will have the authority to tow vehicles. So we'll be doing routine spot checks on the companies and impounding vehicles which are egregiously parked.
Well, analogizing to cars, parking is the responsibility. It is enforced connected to the license plate on that car. So is it basically then up to the company that owns the scooter to be sure it's parked well and courteously?
The user should take it as their responsibility. The user, when they end their ride, should park it courteously. If we do end up impounding vehicles, it will be the company that retrieves it and pays for it. The companies, some of them are experimenting with passing on fees to users. Bird right now makes you take a picture of how you park your scooter. And so they can see if you did park it legally or not, because it's all done through a smartphone.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Meg Young, the Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Department of Transportation Transit Bureau. We're talking about dockless scooters in Baltimore City and the rules around their use. If someone is injured, who's liable?
I'm not a lawyer. I can't give legal counsel to anyone. So I would say if there is a crash, it's going to vary greatly based on a case-by-case basis. There are now laws that are passed, so it depend if somebody was breaking a law while operating a vehicle. And then the users also do accept terms and conditions when they operate the vehicles. So if they're in violation of the terms and conditions, they would not be covered by the scooter companies. The scooter companies are required to have like $1 million of liability insurance.
Some cities have banned electric scooters for safety and other reasons. In a PBS NewsHour segment, one man said, quote, basically pedestrians have become the bowling pins of Santa Monica, close quote. But scooters must yield to pedestrians, right?
Scooters should yield to pedestrians, certainly if they're on the sidewalk, just like a car yields to pedestrians in crosswalks, you're right. So some of the outcries, I think, are people adapting to something that's new. There's a learning curve of how people learn to operate them, how they learn to, you know, interact with other people on the roadway. There is a learning curve, but as it stands right now, the most dangerous thing on the road is still cars.
Well, what are you hearing from pedestrians about scooters?
Well, everything that you've said, people don't like it when someone comes whizzing up behind them and doesn't say anything. And that's something that we're going to approach through our educational campaign, which we can now pay for through permitting fees. So we can educate people about not only following the laws, but just being courteous. When I ride my bike places and I pass somebody, I say, on your left, to let somebody know I'm coming. So it's just getting a lot of those habits in place. And if you think about a scooter, you maybe have never ridden one, and maybe you hadn't ridden one since you were 12 and had a Razor scooter. So making this into a habit to ride courteously can be done over time, and we're going to work to make sure it happens.
Before I let you go, as scooters are gaining traction among users, what is the state of rentable bikes in Baltimore City?
So we would love to see dockless bikes alongside the scooters, and we are incentivizing the companies to bring bikes. So I mentioned the competitive application. We're giving more points to companies who bring more vehicle types. The types that we've seen so far, e-scooters, e-bikes, and bicycles, but we even leave it open to other vehicles which meet certain safety standards and we can approve. We also are allowing a higher fleet size for companies who bring bikes. So we're trying to make it profitable for the companies to bring bikes here.
So everything we've talked about, does this all mean we can expect more dedicated scooter and bike lanes on the streets of Baltimore?
Well, I hope so. When we see more users, I think there will be increasing demand. More people out there experiencing the street outside of their car could very well cause an outcry for more facilities for bikes, for scooters, and small vehicles.
I'm really grateful to you for this overview. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
Meg Young is the Shared Mobility Coordinator at the Baltimore City Department of Transportation Transit Bureau. We have a link to the scooter pilot findings and information about public meetings at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.